I've been to Portland exactly once, Alexa, and I went to a minor league baseball game there, and I wrote a story about an NBA player. And what I noticed is that it's a very quiet city. Have you had any observations about Portland since you got there?
My observations of from being here for 2 hours are that it's very green. It is quite foresty. I feel like certain parts remind me of the whole like Twilight motif. That's a big throwback right there, right? It was rainy, but I think the sun's coming out. So I have no strong impressions other than that. But we will see after I spend a week here. The hotel concierge was shocked when it said I was going to be here for 7 days. I'm like, yep, we're in it. We're here. It's regional time.
Look, we are just like you, frantically refreshing our browsers to see if that Washington Post piece on LSU head coach Kim Mulkey has published yet. But in the meantime, there's plenty of basketball action to talk about as the Sweet 16 gets underway tonight. So today, ESPN women's basketball expert Alexa Philippou joins us from Portland to tell us what she's seen so far in the tournament and what's to come. I'm Clinton Yates. It's Friday, March 29th. This is ESPN Daily. Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot. Taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more. Okay, Alexa, despite the backdrop of all this Kim Mulkey drama, Lord knows what's going on with that, LSU has a game to play against UCLA tomorrow, and we haven't seen the Lady Tigers look like defending champs so far in the tournament as I see it. What's going on, and can they beat this Bruins team if they struggle through another first half like they did?
I think UCLA is an entirely different animal than Rice or Middle Tennessee, and this is the thing, though, with LSU. We've seen them do this before time and time again. They have a crappy first half, and then they figure out a way in the second half to come out on top.
Now this is going to turn out to be a dominating LSU performance. It's all in the second half, but man, did the Tigers wake up.
Obviously, they've had, you know, a few losses, but they still were a 3 seed. They're still the defending champs, and people still think that they're capable of making it to Cleveland. But I know we'll talk about UCLA a little bit more later, but UCLA is a tough team, and they're, you know, we've talked about the Pac-12 being as strong as it's been this year, and they've been part of that.
To Rice, 2 seconds. Creighton doesn't foul. Game over. UCLA headed back to the Sweet 16 after erasing a double-digit second-half deficit. They storm back, and it's now back-to-back Sweet 16 appearances for the Bruins.
So I don't know what's going on necessarily in the locker room there. Like you said, Laura knows what's happening with Kim Mulkey, but whether or not the off-court stuff is impacting the on-court stuff or if it's the same continuation of some of the problems that we saw throughout the year, they're going to have to make sure that they figure it out. And the thing is, even if they beat UCLA, who's going to be waiting on the other side of that? Potentially Iowa or Colorado, which is another tough team, a team that beat them earlier this year. So the path ahead is tough for the Tigers.
Kim Mulkey's squad had 24 turnovers in a 10-point win over Rice, which does not seem like a recipe for success. But we don't have to talk about UCLA later. We can talk about UCLA right now. They were kind of in the shadow of USC and Juju Watkins for most of the year. But here they are through the first weekend of the tournament. What do you think they need to do to get past LSU?
It's funny when you talk about USC being the team of LA that was more high profile, because UCLA also started the season undefeated in non-conference play. When I saw them play at Mohegan Sun, they played Florida State, and it was in an event that also had South Carolina and Utah and all these other really good teams. And I thought, I was like, wow, UCLA might be the second best team in the country.
Dugalich was calling for it. Here's Betts. They haven't gotten a great look for it. Dugalich up high, sticks it.
They've had some ups and downs, but at their best, they are a team that has inside-out play. They have Lauren Betts down low, and that's going to be a really interesting matchup to see how Betts goes up against Angel Reese. And I don't think it's only offensively. It's about her defense. Like, how can she make Angel frustrated and contain her? But then also, when we talk about guard play, and we've talked about LSU's guard play being an X factor for them, UCLA has two really good guards and a fifth-year senior, Chrisma Osborne, and then a sophomore in Kiki Rice. And Kiki Rice is having a great tournament right now.
Rice again steps into the mid range. That's good.
Kiki Rice is surgical.
For the steal, Osborne the spin. Osborne out to Rice. Wants it. Yeah.
I think it was just finding a way to, take it possession by possession, get a stop and get a score. And I think that's what we did in the second half. We stringed together stops and got in transition and started to play our game. But it was just not letting the deficit at halftime, like, take away from our focus and what we needed to execute in the second half.
And if she is able to come out with that same momentum, that same aggression offensively, then I think this matchup could favor UCLA. But again, LSU has been on this stage before, at least some of their players. UCLA has the pressure on them to try and make it to their first NCAA Final Four. So I'm looking at Kiki Rice and how she does, and I'm also looking at how Lauren Betts is able to assert her dominance in the paint.
Tell me more about that guard play for LSU in terms of an X factor. What do they need to do on the court to make sure that they don't get upset?
Well, we've seen Faje Johnson really come into her own this year. She's one of the most improved players in the league. She had a really, really strong start to the tournament as well.
Johnson attacking the paint. Oh, what a tough shot. That's the kind of day it's been for her.
So I think they're going to need her to do what she's been doing. I'm always a fan of Mikayla Williams in terms of when she's hitting her shots and she's able to make LSU a threat from the perimeter. That makes them really good, too. They still have this issue, though, with their point guard play. I mean, we saw Haley Van Lith was benched to start the second half in the Middle Tennessee game.
Haley Van Lith, one of the starters, the 5'9 grad, on the bench. And she has been very emotional, inconsolable at the end of that bench. She's had a very rough tournament to this point.
It actually worked out better defensively as it, you know, this is, again, something we've seen throughout the season where last year Poe comes in and she's able to help them, you know, really set the tone defensively and what they want to do in the second half. So regardless of what players that Kim Mulkey wants out there, they're going to need to be aggressive, but they're also going to have to defend too. And this is a UCLA team that is really tough to defend in all aspects of the game.
Iowa is, of course, the Caitlin Clark show, but they looked pretty rusty after not playing for nearly 2 weeks.
Well, Caitlin, your team had been off for 2 weeks, a little bit of a slow start, some frustration. What was it like in that first half to get going?
I thought they made a lot of shots. I thought they competed really well. Got to give credit to them. I don't know if we really played our best basketball there. Obviously a little rust, but I thought we could have just executed our offense a little better. They really compacted in the paint, but I thought we responded really well. We always had an answer. Obviously played with.
How much of a concern is this as they move through the tournament?
I think so far what we've seen from Iowa are the same sorts of concerns that people have had for them all year. If we take the West Virginia game, for example, that's a really tough defensive team. And they didn't shoot well from the three against West Virginia. They had 15 turnovers and just 7 assists, which is basically the opposite of what Iowa basketball is. But we also got back to that whole idea of who's going to step up besides Caitlin Clark? Because even if she scores 30, that's not always going to be enough. And so against West Virginia, Sydney Alfalter and Hannah Stolke were the only other ones to get in double figures, but it was like 12 and 13 points, not talking like 18, 19 even. So when I think about this Colorado matchup, Colorado is a team that has a gritty, defensive, blue-collar, like hard-nosed identity. This is a matchup that actually both teams are familiar with because they played in the Sweet 16 last year, a game that Iowa won. But Colorado's actually better offensively this year than last year. And if their offense is going the way it can, they're able to hurt their opponents from deep. They're able to get downhill with Jalen Sherrod leading that charge. And they have an interior post presence that is actually a difference from last year to this year. So again, this is going to be, a team, maybe, they're a little bit different defensively than West Virginia, but offensively, they're probably even more threatening. So how Iowa is able to deal with that is going to be really interesting to see.
Putting Duke to the side for a second, it's been a pretty chalky run so far. Only three teams seeded fourth or higher have been eliminated. But the stars of the game that we have talked about all season have definitely been on display. Juju Watkins, Madison Booker, Hannah Hidalgo, Malaysia Fawali, obviously Cameron Brink. Can you tell me a little bit about how those top players have performed so far in the tournament?
Yeah, well, Juju Watkins got USC past the first weekend of the tournament for the first time since 1994. I think that was Lisa Leslie's senior year.
Trying to lock up Watkins. Watkins with the move, though, blows by the defense and the weak side as well. A big size advantage for Juju on the post up. Tipped by Juju and stolen. Juju will pull from three. Oh, wow, Juju. That was deep.
It's so much on the line, and we know it, but we're still coming out here and playing with the same intensity, but with more intensity and just more grit, and we're having fun out here, so yeah.
She had a great game against Kansas, but I also think when we talk about USC, we have to talk about Mackenzie Forbes, and she is being that really good Robin to Juju's Batman, and she has this stretch that she's on where she scored 20 points in three consecutive games, and she never had done that before in her career. When we talk about Madison Booker, similarly leading the charge for Texas, and they were able to take down Alabama to advance the second weekend. Hidalgo is, again, it's like you want these freshmen to do their thing, but they need a little bit of help along the way. So for Hidalgo, if we continue with this team, it's been Sonia Citron and Maddie Westfield helping out. We talk about Fawaii Leo, Malaysia. I mean, she is playing her best basketball the last few weeks. Obviously, we talked about her winning SEC Tournament MVP, and she scored 20 points off the bench in South Carolina's last game against UNC. And we'll get into that a little bit more. But for her to also be able to come in and not have that pressure of needing to perform, unlike maybe a Hidalgo or a Booker or a Juju, where they are the it person, for a while he's like, okay, well, I can do my thing, but also I know I got Camilla Cardoso and Tahina Pau-Pau and Raven Johnson alongside me. So she has a little bit of a different situation. But I think the star power, whether or not it's the freshman, whether or not we talk about someone like, junior Kiki Iriafen, even players that have been eliminated so far this tournament, the Iowa State duo that went off in their two games was so impressive that it's certainly delivered. And I think that's been definitely the prevailing storyline above even the fact that some of this has been a little chalky.
Do you watch the Bachelor franchise, like the TV shows?
So I have historically, but I have not watched this season. And I need to know why we're going here.
Because how when you get to the end and there's a person who you know is not going to win, but you say, oh, they're definitely the next Bachelorette or they're definitely the next Bachelor. That's how I feel about Audi Crooks and Iowa State. Became darlings of the tournament. People finally figured out who this person was and played a great game. From the personality standpoint, I was really glad to see a lot of people learn who she was.
I love that comparison, and I think it's spot on because Iowa State returning their five freshmen next year, plus Emily Ryan, who'll be fifth year, that is going to be a team that no one wants to face in the Big 12. And I'm so excited to see how they even take this experience of almost taking down Stanford at Stanford in overtime and really build off that.
Coming up, can anyone actually beat South Carolina? When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Alexa, the elephant in the room is that everything we just talked about might not matter at all because somehow it feels like the best South Carolina team that Dawn Staley has ever put on the floor, which is a crazy thing to say. They're undefeated. It feels like they're lapping the field, clearly on a mission to right last season's wrongs. How are they so obviously head and shoulders above the competition?
I mean, we have to talk about what they did against UNC because that, specifically the first half of basketball where they led 56-19 going into the locker room, it did not get much more perfect than that.
When you look at this South Carolina team, I just look and say, okay, what is their weakness?
What is the answer to that question?
It's hard to find. Now, there are times that they...
What's crazy is when we actually thought about South Carolina going into this tournament, they didn't play their best basketball. They gave up that huge lead to Tennessee. They almost lost to Tennessee in that game, if not for Camilla Curtis's buzzer beater. That LSU game was even close. They had a bunch of turnovers, 20-something against Texas A&M. So at some point, people were thinking, are they going to falter? Are they going to stumble? But... I think they probably put those concerns or those predictions to rest with what they did against UNC.
David Johnson with the SEC logo, a bit short, got her own rebound. Too many chances will kill you against South Carolina. Swatted away by Malaysia, up ahead, Debrie Hall. Yeah, she got that defense working. The tone was set immediately by South Carolina today. They left no room for questions.
This season when they played in non-conference play, they played in Chapel Hill. It really went down to the last few minutes of that fourth quarter, but that did not happen when they played the second time around. Again, we talked about that 56-19 score at the half, but to me, what really stood out is that South Carolina's bench scored 51 points, and that's more than the entire UNC team had. 51 points! And we talked about Fuwaili before and like what she's able to do, but whether or not it's her or Tessa Johnson, the two of them combined for 7 of South Carolina's 9 threes. So I'm really eager to see how they continue to build off that going into this Indiana game and then whoever they would face in the Elite Eight, because it could be a reunion or a rematch, I should say, against Notre Dame, or it could be against a really gritty and tough Oregon State team, but a team that's very young too. So I don't see anyone though being able to challenge them, at least until Cleveland. And then even there, it's like, this just might be their year. They just might be that good.
I got into a major Twitter argument with some UConn fan who was trying to tell me that Paige Beckers was being criminally underappreciated this season because of what she was doing, because Caitlin Clark was taking up all the airspace. I was like, I don't think anybody's forgotten about Paige Beckers, but she has had quite the tournament and is looking really good now that she's fully healthy. Problem is the Huskies are facing Duke, one of the few teams to buck the chalk this tournament. We love Kara Lawson. How does this one go for you?
For me, it's really interesting because a lot of people were interested in a UConn-Ohio State rematch of last year's Sweet 16. Of course, that was the game where UConn's consecutive streak of 14 Final Four appearances was snapped. And so there was a lot of interest and juice, I think, about that. But then, of course, Duke says, not so fast. We're here and we're going to be, we want to go to Cleveland. We want to go to an Elite Eight. So Duke is a young team. UConn's also a young team, but UConn has players.
Beckers does it again. Come on now. She got fouled as well.
Oh, Edwards was able to find a spot, and Shade found her. Beckers with a nice feed from Mueller.
And that's what you do. It takes Edwards with a good defense, forces another turnover.
It's just so much fun playing here. I'm so thankful that Coach recruited me here and I get to play in front of this great crowd. And I just remember last year after the Baylor game, it was a second round game, I just went to my car and I was so emotional because these high stake games, these games that means everything, I missed it so much. And I just told myself before the Big East tournament, before this tournament, just to embrace it and have fun.
They have those three seniors and Paige, Beckers, Elia Edwards, and Nika Mueller who have played not just in Final Fours, but in a national championship game. I was in stores this weekend, so I think that really shapes my perspective on things. But seeing that trio of seniors and listening to them talk, you can tell that they don't want to exit in the Sweet 16 like they did last year.
I didn't want my last game to be played in Gamble on an L. So I know that we needed a dub. And I think as a team, we just knew that we weren't done yet.
Obviously, last year, Paige wasn't on the floor because of her injury. And Gino Auriemma has even talked about this year's team has a different mindset. And he maybe started to see the cracks appearing when they played Baylor in the second round. But he doesn't feel that way this year. Of course, we'll have to see this. You have to play the game and see what happens. But to me, I think UConn has the edge and experience in these moments. But also we've seen Duke, and the reason why they're here is because they were able to erase a 16-point deficit against Ohio State, which had been to an Elite Eight last year, and they just ran away with the game. And so even if UConn were to go ahead with a crazy lead, you know that that Duke team is capable of fighting back. So it's going to be, I think, a full 40-minute battle, and I would not be surprised if it's tight because you have a team that in some ways has nothing to lose and a team that might feel a little bit more of the pressure of wanting to write what went wrong last year.
Remember earlier in the season when Gino Auriemma kind of made those weird allusions to the fact that he might walk away from the game? With that in mind, I sort of think about the fact that there are so many teams that are on that level now. And you mentioned how this is what the standard of college basketball should be. What do you think about the jobs Gino's doing this year and how that relates to everything he said about him overall potentially saying, you know what, this might not exactly be what I'm doing 2-3 years down the line or whatever it was he said?
Yeah, well, I think, and again, I live in UConn country, so I have a on the ground perspective on this. But the question is, what could have been for at UConn? UConn maybe could have been going undefeated or had won a national title last year, but we'll never know because of all the injuries they had, whether or not it was Paige, whether or not it was AZ Fudd or some of the role players around them. And so when we talk about this parity and UConn's place in it, there's just a lot of murkiness because we don't know what it could have been. And then obviously they have had their ups and downs. They did get to a national title game 2 years ago. And I do think it's interesting this year, in some ways, they don't have the exact same external pressure, I think, to get back to the Final Four, because I don't think many people thought they would probably get there once all the injuries happened. They have six players out for the year now. But I think internally, they're very motivated to do that. And so say they do get back to the Final Four, I mean, would they be able to beat South Carolina? We know how that turned out the first time around earlier this year. So even if they fall short this year, what does that mean for next year? I think when it comes to UConn and Paige Beckers, I mean, one of the reasons she wants to come back is because she wants to win that national championship. So when she comes back next year, and, you know, Gino did say, yeah, I'll be here next year, but, you know, now that I hear that Paige will be, then maybe I'll change my mind. Of course, they have that relationship where they like to give each other crap. But I think part of the answer in terms of UConn's place in this whole landscape with increasing parity could kind of be determined in what happens the next year or two.
We talked about Iowa State earlier. They pushed your Stanford Cardinal to the brink. Cameron Brink, that is. She got.
She was pushed to the brink.
She was pushed to the brink, absolutely. Tell me about your team. What is going on with them and how far are they going to go?
Well, you know, I had Stanford in my bracket to make it to the Final Four. And I that region, though, is very open. And I didn't feel necessarily very confident in that pick. But I will say, if Kiki Iriafen keeps dropping 41-point games, then maybe they'll be fine.
Iriafen on Crooks. There's the quickness. And the finish. 24 for Kiki Iriafen.
I mean, I heard people talk about during that game how she looked like Asia Wilson out there, and I totally agreed.
Kurtz on Ariyafin. Determined expression. Ariyafin with a block.
She was unstoppable, and just the different ways she's able to score. You know, her face-up game is really incredible. And this is a player that was averaging like 6 points a game last year, 4 points a game as a freshman. And so to see her, I think it's a great story of someone who was able to stay in a program. And again, nothing against players that transfer and find new homes, but she stuck it out at Stanford.
I kind of just remembered where we were at last year. It wasn't a great taste in our mouth. I feel like this whole season, we've had that loss last year in the back of our minds. So didn't want that to happen 2 years in a row. I think also for our seniors, for Cameron, for Hannah, we didn't want this to be our last game. And then again, like, we want to get to Portland. This is not the end of our season. We want to make it all the way to Cleveland. So I think, you know, just giving it my all to make sure that we can get to Cleveland was something that was in my mind today.
She was able to play alongside Cameron Brink. But in that moment where Cameron Brink was not on the floor because she fouled out and she didn't really have a great game offensively, it was Kiki who got that shine and was able to make her mark as a Stanford legend. So if they can keep getting that from Kiki and Cameron Brink ideally stays on the floor, that I think will help them a lot. So I'm looking at the front court play, but also think the X factor all season long has been the guards. And so that can be a little bit of a good sign that they got some of that in that Iowa State game. But I guess it's good to be challenged. And you know what? They had those memories of losing in the second round last year against Ole Miss. That's now behind them. They made it past the second round. We'll see what's in store for them against a really good NC State team.
Last thing I'll ask you, we can't deny the moment that this tournament has been, the moment that this season has been. That said, they still have to play the games and the brackets are what they are. Are there any matchups and anything you think, I don't want to say needs to happen, but would sort of help the game in terms of continuing the momentum of what everybody's been so excited about with all the talent and all the teams?
If Iowa and LSU do end up meeting in the Elite Eight, which again, we've talked about, that could have been a Final Four matchup. It could have been a national championship game matchup because it was last year. I think that we'll see such a skyrocket of eyeballs and of interest. I don't think that needs to happen for the sport to be in a good place, for the tournament to be successful. And it's really interesting. I mean, that's the big question on everyone's minds, though, is kind of within that. It's what happens if Caitlin Clark doesn't make it to Cleveland? You know, is the interest still going to be there? And I hope that people who maybe are newer to the game because they started following Caitlin Clark, if she's not in Cleveland, are able to see the other stars that are really tremendous in this sport as well, whether or not it's a Juju Watkins or it's a Kiki Rice or Kiki Ariyafin or a Paige Beckers or someone that might even emerge within the next week. So that will be really fascinating to see how that unfolds. But I think it's in such good hands. I love seeing all the random celebrities that were at first and second round games. Like the Westbrooks were in UCLA. You know, Vanessa Bryant was at USC. The Kittles were in Iowa. And it was like Kevin Durant was watching Madison Booker at Texas and Austin. It just felt like the women's tournament in those early round games, no less, like was the place to be last week. And so I think that'll even continue to unfold as we get into the regionals and then as we head to Cleveland.
Speaking of the place to be, I hope you have a good time in Portland. Thank you, Alexa.
Thanks, Clinton. Talk to you soon.
One programming note here at the end. I will be out next week, but don't worry. My buddy Israel Gutierrez will hold down the fort until your boy returns. I'm Clinton Yates, kiddos. This has been ESPN Daily. Our show is produced by
Bruce Baldwin,
Ashley Brown,
Bradford Craig,
Alexander Hyacin,
Ryan Nantel,
Mike Philbrick,
and Phoebe Unterman.
And special thanks to Andrew Hahn. We'll talk to you Monday.